Good afternoon. We'll begin in just a moment. For those just joining, letting you know that we're waiting for people to come in before we start. The number is starting to level off. We have one person with their hand raised. If you have a comment or a question, please put that in the Q&A. All right, I think we've pretty much leveled out. There are still a few people joining. If you want to go ahead, Margaret.
Thanks, Jeremy. Hello, everyone. Good morning and good afternoon. I want to start with thank you. So thanks to Jeremy, Alan, Almedena, Ephraim, Mimi, Karen, Henry Kautz, and the rest of the NSFers who have organized this CRII webinar. And thanks to all of you who are out there, who are new professors eager to engage with NSF as you start on your research careers. To briefly introduce myself, my name is Margaret Martinosi, and in February, I began leading the National Science Foundation's Computer and Information Science and Engineering, or SCISE, Directorate. While at NSF, I'm on leave from, but still retaining my tenure with Princeton University, where I'm a computer scientist myself, and I've been on the faculty since 1994. So I'm excited about my new role at NSF SCISE. It's a great opportunity to advocate for the full breadth of important SCISE research areas and to set the direction for future research funding, as well as education and workforce activities. And as you can imagine, that sort of advocacy is as important now as it's ever been. NSF actually funds over 85% of the federally funded basic academic research NCS in the U.S. That's an extraordinary opportunity and privilege, and it's also a big responsibility that we have to ensure that our very vibrant community keeps getting its funding. The CRII program that you're here for today was started relatively recently, a few years ago, with the idea of leveling the playing field. So leveling the playing field regarding how faculty are able to get started on their research careers. And in particular, we at NSF saw considerable variability between the resources available to different early career researchers as they got rolling at their faculty positions. There's variability depending on the type of school you're at, what resources it has, and there's also variability depending on the type of faculty position you're in, with so-called soft money or teaching positions often receiving considerably less startup resources on which to begin their research efforts. So CRII has never been envisioned to be something that everyone would do on their way to career proposals, but rather as a specific offering to those who need it in order to reduce the unevenness in resources as faculty get started. We've worked really hard. The people that you see on the Zoom have worked really hard over the past 2 years to continue to clarify the role of CRII and the expectations for whom should apply to it. We hope that the most recent solicitation revision, the template for your department head's letter, and recent additional FAQ clarifications, all of which you'll hear about today, have been helpful in that regard. And I'm sure your conversations with the program officers here today will offer further help. So I want to say a huge and really heartfelt thank you to the program officers who work on CRII. It is quite simply not an easy program to work on in terms of identifying the best way to communicate the program's role and goals, and then run fair and equitable review processes towards those goals. And so I really, really appreciate their hard work on that, and I hope you do as well. I also want to say a huge thank you and welcome to you, the 250 or so early career faculty who are out there on this webinar. I want to extend an invitation to all of you to consider joining us at NSF, either in person or virtually these days, for panel reviewing where you can. We benefit from your expertise, and you benefit from seeing how proposal review processes work. We're always looking for more of you to share your talents in this way. And finally, I arrived as a faculty member at Princeton just about 26 years ago this month, and I remember walking into that building with massive first day of school jitters, incredible doubt about whether I'd be able to do it, any of it, get the funding, advise the PhD students, teach the classes, and so on. I did manage to do it, thanks both to a great set of colleagues and mentors who watched over me, and thanks also to NSF, whose funding was instrumental throughout my career. And so I want to close by saying, you will do it too. You're starting your careers in the midst of a really unprecedented set of events, and I know they're challenging. But I also know that our SCIESS community is filled with people who want you to succeed. We know that the world is very much in need of the research and the ideas that you are all ready to get rolling on. So thanks very much for joining this webinar. Thank you for joining the NSF SCIESS community. And I know that you all have engaging and enjoyable research careers ahead of you. So thanks very much. Have a great webinar. And with that, I will hand it over to Jeremy.
Thanks, Margaret. Appreciate it. And again, I appreciate all attending the webinar today and my colleagues for participating today in the discussion. So I'm going to go through slides for about 10 minutes here. And the primary purpose of this event is for you to ask questions. So please ask your questions through the Q&A button in Zoom, and I see we already have six questions queued up there. So we'll be organizing those as we go along, but feel free to add your questions whenever you're ready. So I'm Jeremy Epstein. I'm the lead program officer for the Secure and Trustworthy Cyberspace program, and I'm also the lead for the CRII program together with Almudena, Ephraim, and Alan, and also Henry Kautz, who is one of the division directors who has been working with us as well. And I also want to give a special shout out to Karen Geary, who is our SCIESS representative, and our folks in NSF meeting and events without whom this. So let's get started here. Oops, let's get started maybe. Oops, there we go. Sorry. Okay, so we're going to briefly summarize the goals of the program, the requirements for eligibility, areas of interest in the program, the submission process, the review process, and a few of the frequently asked questions. Everything in this presentation is a synopsis of the solicitation, which has more details. The recently updated FAQs have many questions and answers. If we don't cover whatever questions you have today, please check the FAQs. If you don't find the answer there, please contact one of us. Our contact information is on the CRII website and will also be on the last slide of this presentation. These slides will be posted to the NSF website after the conclusion of this webinar. We're going to try to keep the webinar to about an hour, but we can stay longer if needed for Q&A. The most important thing to do is to read the solicitation and then read it again. Our program is to support researchers in the first 3 years of their academic positions. Importantly, the CRII program seeks to provide essential resources to enable early career PIs to launch their research careers. For the purposes of this program, SCIESS defines essential resources as sufficient funds for 48 months of graduate student support. In particular, this program is not appropriate for PIs who already have access to resources to conduct research. Eligibility for this program has been the number one question asked since the program began. In short, there are four parts to eligibility. First, you must be in an academic position, not a postdoc or a research associate, at a university or 2 or 4 year college as of the deadline for submission. You must be in the first 3 years of a tenure track or research, science, or education position or equivalent. Positions in government or industry do not count against the three-year limit. Neither do positions as postdocs or research assistants. students held overseas, whether tenure track, tenured or not, do count toward the 3-year limit. These limits are calculated as of the deadline for submission, November 2nd, 2020. Your primary appointment must be in an area supported by size, computer science, information science, or electrical or computer engineering being most common but not exclusive. For example, you could be in a mechanical engineering department if your research is in the computing aspect of robotics or smart cars. Second, it must have been no more than 5 years since your PhD, not counting family or medical leave. This limit is also calculated as of the deadline for submission, November 2nd, 2020. The third part of eligibility is that you have not received any grants from NSF or other agencies in the PI role. Being in the co-PI role does not disqualify, nor do these other specific types of NSF grants. Additionally, awards from your university or contracts from a company do not disqualify. Note that if you have a collaborative NSF grant, the lead PI from each institution is considered a PI, so even being the PI from a non-lead institution would disqualify. The two questions in determining eligibility from this perspective are, one, where does the money come from? And two, what is your role? The amount of money involved does not matter, be it small or large. Note that this rule is as of the time of award, not as of the time of submission. So if your proposal is selected for an award, the NSF program officer will ask you to certify that you have not received any disqualifying grants. The fourth and most complex part of eligibility is available resources. The resources you received in the past or currently have, regardless of the origin of those resources and whether or not they have been spent, must not be more than enough to support a graduate student for 24 months. Your proposal must include these months of graduate student support, and the two put together must be no more than 48 months. Oops. So if you have 20 months of support from your startup package or other grants, you are eligible, and you can request between 24 and 28 months of graduate student support, 24 months being the minimum and 28 being the maximum, which would bring you to a total of 48 months. If, on the other hand, you have 30 months of support from your startup package or other grants or sources, you are not eligible. If 24 months of graduate support plus the required 1 month of support is more than the $175,000 maximum when including indirect and other costs, you are not eligible. If you're from a predominantly undergraduate institution, the month formula does not need to be filled in the department chair letter. So we talked about it in the last slide, but before moving on, I just want to emphasize one more time these eligibility dates. If your PhD was granted before November 2nd, 2015, you are not eligible for family or medical leave exceptions, in which case you should talk to your program officer. If you started your academic appointment before November 2nd, 2017, you are not eligible unless you have family or medical leave exceptions, in which case you should talk to your program officer. There are no other exceptions, even if it's just by a few days. We know there are people who received their degree between August 2015 and November 2015, and hence were eligible under the old solicitation, but not this one. Or similarly, who started their appointment between August 2017 and November 2017. If you fall into those categories, we encourage you to consider applying to the SIZE core solicitations, the CPS program, the SATC program, or other programs across SIZE consistent with your research areas. Please don't ask for an exception, except for family or medical leave reasons. As said earlier, this program is open to faculty doing research in any of the areas supported by SIZE, plus the current SIZE programs that are accepting CRII submissions. Your proposal must list at least one program which is relevant to your research proposal. Descriptions of each of the programs can be found on the NSF website. Strictly follow the solicitation guidelines for titling your proposal. This helps us ensure that it's seen by the appropriate program officers and reviewers. So the most important thing to do is read the solicitation and then read it again. As described in the solicitation, proposals are limited to 10 pages, not the 15-page limit typical for most NSF proposals. We're not going to review the rules for fonts and margins on this call. Please see the NSF Proposal and Award Policies and Procedures Guide, PAPPG, for instructions. Trying to squeeze in more text by reducing font or margins is not only frustrating to reviewers, but is also likely to have your proposal returned without review. Oops. A few other permission. No PIs or other senior personnel are permitted. However, consultants and subawardees are allowed, although unusual. The proposal must be for no more than $175,000 and must be for exactly 2 years, no more, no less. You may only submit one CRII proposal per calendar year. A common question is whether a PI may submit both a CRII and career proposal in the same calendar year. The answer is no. So when you submit your proposal, there are other miscellaneous things that have to be submitted with it. The data management plan is required to be submitted as a supplementary document in Fastlane. If you have included postdocs in your budget, you must have a one-page postdoc mentoring plan submitted as a supplementary document. Your proposal must include a letter from your department chair certifying that you meet the requirement, eligibility requirement, including that you meet the time from PhD within 5 years, no more than 3 years as of the submission deadline. The letter must follow the template on the NSF website. And I should also have mentioned in the slide that look at the template, but it's 3 pages. The first page is the letter, and the second and third pages are additional criteria to help your department chair answer a lot of the questions about the letter. The budget is intended to be spent mostly on students, including both undergraduates and graduates. Some fraction may go to specialized equipment, such as unique hardware or software needed for research. Some travel funds are expected. As noted, the total must not exceed $175,000. The proposal must include at least 24 months of support for graduate students, except at primarily undergraduate students, where undergraduate students are expected. Supplements REU supplements for CRII awards following standardized NSFs. Proposals will be reviewed using the standard NSF merit review process, which will include consideration of both intellectual merit and broader impact. Unlike career proposals, there is not a specific educational component required. Factors that will be considered in the review process include relevance to one or more of the size programs, as mentioned on a previous slide, the appropriateness of the research to a 2-year window, the potential to produce sufficient preliminary research to help you prepare for other research awards, such as, but not limited to, career, and whether the activities are appropriate to help you achieve research independence. So, the most important thing to do is read the solicitation and then read it again. So thank you for participating in this webinar. We hope the CRII program will enable new faculty members to initiate independent research through funding students and related support. The slides and audio will be posted to the website. And as a reminder, proposals are due November 2nd, 2020. So read the solicitation, follow the font and margin requirements, follow the title guidelines, make sure that all the required sections are easily identifiable, and make sure the department chair letter follows the template. We know you have lots of questions, and as a matter of fact, I see 44 of them so far in the Q&A, so please do submit them through the Zoom Q&A. I'm going to move this to here so you have all of our names. Our email addresses can be located on the NSF website. And with that, Alan, if you would start asking questions, and if I would ask my other co-conspirators, Ephraim, Almedena, Henry, to turn your video and audio on so we can start answering questions. Alan, over to you.
Yeah, so I was doing my best to keep up, but the questions were coming in way faster than I could even look at them. So I did some organization, but now I'm behind. So I'll do what I'll
sounds we'll go like a faculty one, member.
we'll go through the ones that I organize, and then I've marked where I was up to, and we'll just sort of deal with them as we can get to them. So the first question is asking about, well, it's one of the first ones about the department chair letter, the department head department chair letter, saying that no changes to the format or layout of the letter template are permitted. The question is, can they add more, can the chair add more content? For example, in the essential resources section, can the chair add study data collection effort or support in addition to student support?
So, Henry, are you in here?
You just asked me?
Yes, Henry, would you like to answer that question?
I didn't quite understand, because I think we only, I think we only want the information about money that could be used to support students. So I'm looking, is the question in the Q&A window?
Yes, it's the very first one.
You know, I shouldn't do that. Sorry.
Yeah, I think maybe they're in a different order for me. can I pass this back to you? Because I'm not finding the question. I'm having trouble.
Okay. So it asks basically what the question is whether there are any changes allowed to the chair letter, or it has to be exactly the template.
I think the answer is it has to be exactly the chair letter. Exactly the template, excuse me.
That's right, no additions, no subtractions, right? Because I think later there's another question which asks if it can be put on to department letterhead, and I think that's fine. I mean, we didn't say that it has to use, because that's a PDF, not even an editable PDF. So, but the form, it has to be exactly that content, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So the next question, well, that was actually the second question was about the being on institutional letterhead, and the answer to that is yes, it can be on letterhead. It's just the format, not the actual document itself. And that gets into, again, there was another question about should the department chair letter be, could there be a separate letter on top of the template? And the answer to that is
no.
Okay, then the next question, and there's at least one other that's related to that, is the CRI available for postdoctoral researchers? Can they apply for it?
No.
And again, right, the answer to that is no. Well, I didn't organize, there's another one that asks about research scientists, and I think—
Research scientists are eligible.
Right, as long as they have research responsibilities, right? Primarily research responsibilities are allowed to apply for CRI, right?
Yes, and I think they need to be supervising, have the ability to supervise students.
Right, that's the key. Okay, the next question is about is really about the format of the proposal in the current and pending support. Really, what they're asking is if the faculty member doesn't have a current support, do they still need to put something into that section? And I'll let somebody else answer that.
But it is a mandatory section, but it can just say no previous NSF support. It doesn't have to say any more than that.
Well, I'll follow up on that. But typically also people do put the current proposal as a pending proposal because they will have submitted it.
I'm sorry.
Be the one thing in the current and pending would be a pending for the one that just submitted, right?
Correct. Thank you. The section that's also required, which is results from prior NSF funding, and that one should just say no prior NSF funding. But you're absolutely correct. The current and pending support form should list the CRII proposal that this is part of.
Okay, This one is about the actual content of the proposal. Due to the interdisciplinary nature of my research proposal, I have collaborators from a medical school, but they are not co-PIs in the CRI proposal. So to mention their information, should I use the COA template that was updated in May 2018? So did they go into the list of collaborators?
Yes, they should go in the list of collaborators. And if they're paid collaborators, they would have to be consultants or subcontractors. And that would be a small fraction of the total budget. Unpaid, you could still have their, I'm not sure if you can include a CV for someone who's an unpaid collaborator. I think you can.
I think you would do it as a letter of collaboration. And
yes, you're right.
Right, if it's unfunded. Okay. This one is again about the format of the proposal itself. Is there any template file for budget preparation and the budget justification?
I believe there's some generic stuff on the NSF website about that. There's nothing specific to CRII for that. Karen, I know you like to hide in the shadows, but do you know if where to find that on the NSF website by any chance?
I don't think it's the question we need to answer. PIs need to talk to their sponsored research office. They will know the answer to questions like this. They have the budget forms, they have the current and pending support forms, and they will guide you in how to fill those out. You don't need to worry about that or look for those things yourself.
Ephraim, a much better answer than mine, thank you.
That's right. The other resource is also your other faculty members who've done NSF proposals before can help you with sort of templates for different sections of the proposal. That's always a good thing to do. I can say that as a faculty member in my, you know, my current and previous life. So, but yeah. So the next one is about budget. So when preparing a budget, the faculty member's understanding is to mainly focus on funds related to graduate assistance and other similar resources. So that's just really what are appropriate things to put into the budget.
That's correct. There's a minimum requirement of a half a month per year, or missing month over the 2 years as a minimum of salary for the PI.
Right, and then also of 24 months of graduate student support minimum.
Right.
Right, and then the rest is pretty much up to the faculty member.
Correct.
Right, it can be any other types of things that need to be funded to do the research. The next set of questions is about eligibility. So the first question said, this is about when the limit on being in the first 3 years of a tenure track position and when that's counted from. And so the question starts with, I started my tenure track position on August 15th, 2018, which was after the submission deadline that year. But the question is, what are exactly the eligibility criteria? Those are very, very straightforward. So, Jeremy.
So I think this one falls into the slide which hadn't been presented. I see that this was asked at 2:08. So before I had presented that slide about the deadlines and recognizing that there are some number of people who would have been eligible under the old solicitation and are not eligible under this solicitation. In this case, this person is eligible this year, but will not be eligible if the rules stay the same next year, because it would be more than 3 years that they would have been in an academic position.
Right, and it's always as of the date, the deadline, the submission deadline date is the relevant date. So you're counting right. 3 years from the time you started your tenure track position to the submission deadline date. That's the 3 years.
Right, and I'm glad you said that, Alan. It's also really important to hear what Alan said, submission deadline, not submission date. So if you submit, in the case of this particular person, they cannot submit their proposal on August 14th to be within 3 years of starting their position. It's as of the deadline, not as of when you submit.
Right. Okay, right. So there are a couple more, but they're very, very similar.
I see one about soft funding folks, and those are eligible.
Right, that's what we got into, like, with as long as you're as long as you fulfill the other criteria, right?
It
doesn't matter whether you're tenure track or not. Would pending NSF grants in a PI role disqualify for submitting a proposal?
That's the one, and again, a lot of these questions were asked before I went over them in the slides, so I'll just briefly repeat that the awards, the rule about not having received a prior award is as of when we make the award decision, not as of submission date. So if you've applied for some other award and you haven't received an answer yet, go ahead and submit. If it gets awarded in the interim, then you will not receive a CRII. But if it gets declined in the interim, then you are eligible.
So the relevant question is whether the PI has been a PI on a funded award by the time the CRII award would be granted, would be awarded.
Yes.
Okay. The next set of questions, and I know there are a lot of these, has to do with sort of the financial eligibility and startup packages. So we can start with the straightforward question, but we can get into sort of more of the details. If I have two PhD students supported for 2 years in my startup package, can I submit a CRI proposal? Henry, this is where you shine.
Well, not if they are supported in your startup package.
Right. So again, my advice here is to look at that chair letter template. It's quite explicit. There's ways to count how you can count sort of what you currently have as support to decide whether you're eligible for CRII. I don't think we can go in here into sort of all the possible sort of scenarios, right? So the key is to look at the chair's letter, the template, and the documentation that on how to compute what your current support, what you're able to currently support. That will tell you whether you're eligible. Is that fair?
Right.
Good answer.
And it even taught, yeah, I mean, there was a question here about what does a graduate student mean? Is it, how do you count? And there's information there about it doesn't matter how many graduate students, the number of graduate student months that are supported, and how to count if TA support counts for only half, and it's all in that template letter, right, Henry?
Right. Yeah. So yeah, just follow the instructions for the template.
And I want to emphasize that we're not criticizing the fact that you asked these questions because you asked them before we got that far in the presentation. So thank you for asking them, and the answers are all there.
Okay.
I see one that I want to hit in particular because this comes up periodically. Our budget with minimum requirements of 2 grad students and 1 month faculty support exceeds the budget maximum amount. Does this mean we are excluded from applying? The answer is yes.
Right. And again, it's a total of 24 months of graduate student support you have to ask for. Right, so it's not 2 students for 2 years. That would be, you know, 1 student for 2 years. However, it doesn't matter. Right, it's 24 months of graduate student support is the minimum, and also a month of the faculty member support. Right.
Yep.
That's the minimum. Okay. To what extent are preliminary results required in a CRI grant proposal?
If Ryan, I'm going to toss that one to you since you haven't had a chance.
Sure. Preliminary results are not required for CRII. What we're looking for is for you, the PI, to have a bold idea for a research program that you hope to accomplish over multiple years. And you're asking for money to do the first 2 years of the work with some grad students to start the work, not to complete it. If your proposal would involve completing a given piece of work, then it's not an appropriate CRII proposal. We want you to think big. What would you like to work on for the next 5 or 10 years? You may not yet have had a chance to do much in that area, so you might not have preliminary results. But if your ideas seem to be possible, they might work. Reviewers are instructed to give you the benefit of the doubt in that case and to give you the potential green light. So we're looking for new ideas for long-term research projects. And this award, if you get it, would just be the start of doing the work, perhaps allowing you to get a few preliminary results to bolster a future proposal, either for the career program or for our core small solicitation, which I encourage everybody to take a close look at. The core small solicitation is a good follow-on to this CRII solicitation, but if you are not eligible for CRII for any reason, you should instead consider submitting directly to our core small solicitation. It offers more money for more time potentially, although the number of years you choose. It has none of the restrictions that CRII has. It offers more money without the restrictions. And now, starting October 1st, which isn't that far away, there are no deadlines to that solicitation. You can submit your proposal whenever you're ready, and you don't have to worry about getting it done in time for some specific deadline.
Except if I am for OAC, where we still have a deadline.
Ah, okay, sorry about that. But yes, I'm thinking, of course, primarily always about my own division, which is I'm most familiar with. But yes, I definitely recommend to everybody, CRII is a good place to submit if you don't have any preliminary results, as long as you have some exciting ideas. They do not have to be things you can complete in 2 years. That's not the goal of this solicitation, not to accomplish a specific piece of work and be done with it. We don't want that. On the contrary, we want something that will take longer than 2 years. You're just going to start it with this money. And this money might not even be enough for everything you need. Maybe you need to buy a robot, and that budget will not allow you to buy a robot. So we'll expect you to get more money somewhere else afterwards to do that. So this solicitation provides the money for the grad students and for a bit of summer support for you as the PI. It's not intended to supply all the money that you need to really do the research. And like I said, if you're not eligible for whatever reason, think of our core small solicitation. It's a brand new revised solicitation, came out just month or so ago. No deadlines, no restrictions on who can apply. We don't care if you have previous awards or lots of current awards or anything. You can just apply to that if CRII is not for you for whatever reason. Does that answer the question, Apple?
Let me add one other thing. As Ephraim said, he's looking out for his division. I'm going to look out for my division. In addition to everything Ephraim said, also look at the cyber physical system and SATC, the cybersecurity program, are also good places. They both have small proposals and have many of the same characteristics. So just making sure that in addition to the cores, you also look at CPS and SATC, which are sort of similar, but not the same as cores.
Good point. Thank you.
Okay. The next question is about SBIRs. So this person has a subcontract from an SBIR award, with the awardee being a company, of course. So does that subcontract disqualify the person, nope, even though they're a tenure track faculty and will work on the subcontract on the university side?
Nope, because it's not an award from NSF as a PI.
That's right. That's right. The subcontract is, that's right. The company is the prime. So, okay, now I have to switch over to my pre-prepared ones, the ones I've already looked at, and now we'll go to the ones in order. I'll start, and hopefully we'll skip the ones that have already been discussed. So this one is about primarily undergraduate institutions. So the university is a primarily undergraduate institution. Should I include RUI in the title? But they have MS and master's degrees. Should I include the RUI in the title and follow the related rules for RUI?
Yes.
Sure.
That's quite straightforward. But then there's one right after that talks about, is there guidance on the research support eligibility criteria for faculty members at PUIs, at RUIs? Any amount of institutional research support that would render a faculty member from a PUI ineligible for a CRII?
No, there's no specific rules for PUIs. I think that's rare enough that they would have adequate support. Other than I think the requirement is, instead of 24 months of graduate student support, it's 48 months of undergraduate support. And I would include, I guess, master students with the undergraduates. So you need to have 48 months of student, but that there isn't a requirement about support you already have.
If I could just add a word here. We are very eager to receive proposals from primarily undergraduate institutions. We get relatively few of them, very few of them. And so if you are in such an institution, please do consider submitting. Don't be shy about that. Don't be frightened of it or whatever. We want your proposal.
I'm glad you said that, Ephraim. I would also say that if you're from an undergraduate institution, I would encourage you to look through the list of prior awardees, find some of the people from undergraduate institutions who have received awards in the past, and talk to them about how they incorporated undergraduates or even master students in their research programs. Don't try to solve all the problems by yourself. Learn from people who have successfully done it. And I'm sure everybody knows, all of the lists of NSF awards are public on the NSF website with abstracts and names and contact information for PIs. So especially folks from under PUIs should really take advantage of that resource.
Right, and it's easy to search for because that'll be RUI will be in the title of the project. So it's easy to search for in the website. Okay. The next question is, my department is education with a capital E. Is that eligible? So is there a list somewhere of acceptable departments?
Almost any department could be acceptable. We have funded projects in English departments, business departments, all the engineering departments, you name it. As long as your research relates to computer science writ large, you can submit. We don't care what department you work in.
I think that was quite explicit. Thank you. some of these have already been answered. That's why I'm looking. We've already answered a lot of these, so.
Let me read one, and while you're looking, Alan, for more, I recently submitted a planning grant proposal as the PI for NSF Civic 2020. Does that disqualify me? The answer is no. Submitting grants does not disqualify. It's receiving grants. Any grant that was received as of the time of we make an award decision would disqualify. It doesn't matter what program. It's the receiving, not submitting.
Right, and it's being the PI. Co-I doesn't, yes. Co-PI doesn't matter. You have to be the PI on the award.
Correct.
Okay, so this gets back to eligibility also. So my role is research scientist, but my immediate supervisor is not a department chair as required in the submission documents. I'm a research scientist funded by a professor's grant. Am I eligible?
yes.
I think the answer is yes.
You would still have a, you know, get the letter from your department chair or your dean or whatever it is, even if it's not your direct supervisor.
Right. That's the key, is it's the letter still has to come from a department head, right? Not the direct supervisor necessarily. And the research scientist has to be eligible to be able to submit a proposal.
Right.
Okay, and this one is again about startup funds, but I think it's worth reiterating. But it says, this is, if my startup funds are distributed over several years, do I include my entire startup package or only the research that I've had access to by the deadline?
All of it.
All of it.
And the answer is all of it. Right, a startup package is a startup package. Resources are resources. It doesn't matter when, it doesn't matter if you've already spent them. You have to count them.
Yep, and the letter, the department chair letter instructions are pretty explicit that it's anything you've already gotten or will get in the future, even uncommitted funds, et cetera, all of it.
Right. And I don't remember, Jeremy, because I wasn't paying close enough attention, but multiple people have asked about the slides being shared, and these will be posted?
Yes.
On the program page for the program?
Right, and as will a recording. I think only a recording of the pre-prepared part. I don't think the Q&A gets posted, but I'm not sure. Karen, if you're still with us, can you answer how much of the recording gets posted?
It should be the entire recording that gets posted. We'll also post a copy of the presentation slides, the transcript, and the audio files, I believe. So it should be on the program webpage, and it'll be on the event site where everybody registered.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay. The next one is, if I include a postdoc in my funding proposal, but I'm unable to recruit one in the time period of grant, what happens to those designated funds? That's a different one.
As with any NSF award, you have, within the scope of what the requirements are, you have a fairly broad ability to reallocate funds. So you could either reallocate from a postdoc with permission from the NSF program officer. I think you could reallocate it to hiring more graduate students or to hiring a research scientist or something like that. You would just write an email to the program officer asking for approval to do that.
Right. Okay. So, how do you recommend researchers at nonprofit organizations support graduate students? Would this be similar to supporting a student at a university, hiring them as an RA, including tuition as part of their compensation? So can nonprofits, can people at nonprofits, I don't know if they're eligible. So
I don't recall the language whether nonprofits are eligible.
Okay, well, should we come back to that one?
Yeah. I'm looking up the solicitation. Hold on one more second. Who may submit? Nonprofits, non-academic institutions may submit. Okay, so clearly the answer to that is yes. And clearly we don't see it very often, or I would have known the answer to that. Let's see, how would they hire students? Yeah, they would typically hire them and also support tuition. It's really up to the institution what the normal way they do that would be.
Right, when an outside person is paying for a graduate student, that's right. That's how it would have to be done. But even within a university, there are tuition costs, right? Those are typically done as other direct costs in the budget for funding graduate students, right? The tuition, that's fairly typical for any grant, not just a CRII.
Right.
Okay. So since you were looking at the solicitation, are there requirements for U.S. citizenship?
Didn't see
that, but wanted to confirm.
No, the webpage, I think, still says that it is not a requirement, because for about 1 or 2 weeks, 7 years ago, it was a requirement and then it was waived. So if you see it on the website, that's why. But no, there's no requirement for citizenship or even permanent residence.
Just has to be at a U.S. institution.
Right? Correct.
Okay. If the faculty member is at a PUI, can he or she ask for additional salary support for sabbatical up to 2 months per year or more?
The 1 month requirement is a minimum. It's not a maximum. So I guess they could do that.
Right. So if there's release time or whatever is a legitimate expense.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Okay, so this one's a little more extensive, and this we can get into a little bit more. What's the advantage of applying for a CRII versus a career? How would you advise on which one is a better fit? So can somebody want to take the distinguishing between the soft career and the CRII?
I can try that. You want me to try
yes.
that?
Yes.
Career is one of our most prestigious awards. Many people seem to equate it with something that may even be required in certain universities for tenure. I don't personally believe it, and I hope it's not true, but it's considered very, very prestigious. And so those proposals are typically reviewed by senior faculty members only, people who have received career awards before and who are looking for something big and bold, which if successful will really make a name for the PI. As opposed to CRII, where they're looking for somebody starting out who has some exciting ideas that might pan out if they got a bit of money to start working on it. So in general, career is going to be more difficult to get a great rating from the reviewers for it. Also, career requires you, the PI, to already have an idea of how you're going to make your mark as an educator, because that's a required part of the proposal, that you have to talk not only about the research you want to do, but the educational activities that you intend to do to make your mark. And you can think of it this way, perhaps 20 years after you teach somebody in a course, you'll be visiting some museum somewhere in Europe, like I once was, and a person will come up to you and say, "You don't remember me, professor, but you taught me as a freshman and it really made a big difference." And they wouldn't have done that if they didn't like the course. If they hated it, they would have stayed away from me, I guess. So that is, you can see this is my second career here at NSF. So I was a professor for many years first. You want to make your mark as an educator. You should have some ideas, things you're already doing, things you intend to do to be a good educator. The solicitation and career requires you to think seriously about that. You cannot just write a sentence at the end of your 15 pages saying, "And oh, by the way, I'll teach an upper level undergraduate course in my area of research." Because if you write that, the panel, they're all professors, are going to start laughing. You won't be in the room, luckily, to hear it, but they will start laughing because that's something every faculty member has to do. So you can't just write that and expect it to carry the day as far as the education component of a career proposal is concerned. Whereas, as I think Jeremy said earlier, there is no education component required for CRII. We just want to know about the research you want to start doing. Do you have some ideas that might be exciting, that they might work? Maybe not. You don't have preliminary results yet. For career, if you have no preliminary results, it's very hard to get the panel to give you the green light. You have to have some. You cannot write in a career proposal, "The first year, if I get the money, I'm going to go out and see what needs to be done in this field. I'll do a literature search," and stuff like that. If you write that, it's instant death in a career proposal. So yes, they're quite different, the two. And that's why we actually added this CRII program to our portfolio of solicitations that were available a few years back, because we realized we needed something for people who weren't quite ready to go up to the higher level. We're submitting proposals that had no chance of success, and we're wasting basically everybody's time, including their own. I don't know. Did I explain that clearly? I hope not too blurry.
I think I just want to add a couple other points. One is that while there's no requirement in CRII for an education plan, there still is a requirement for broader impact. That's a requirement of all NSF proposals. And there are many forms of broader impact that are not education. So make sure that you are addressing broader impact as well as intellectual merit, the science of it. And that would be true for both CRI and career. The difference, as Ephraim said, is that career also has a requirement for a specific educational aspect. I think more generally, what I think Ephraim is saying is the expectations for career, a career proposal, are much higher in terms of what you've already done and the vision you have. A proposal for 5 years of work for CRI is a proposal for 2 years of work. So there's definitely a difference in the expectation of how much vision you've worked out. That's enough said about that.
Good point. Thank you.
Okay. So this one, I don't know how much we can say, but we should at least ask it. Does SISE anticipate a new solicitation will be released in 2021? If so, is there any possibility the deadline dates will be changed again?
So we're not allowed to speculate on things that haven't happened. And so I won't. There's always been a new solicitation every year for the past 7 years. What we do with the dates, we haven't made any decisions about.
Right. But I think there is a deadline for next year already posted on the program page.
There is. The solicitation says September 20th, 2021 as the deadline for next year, but we always re-release the solicitation, and it's possible that will be done. I hope it won't, but it's always possible.
Okay. The next question is about... I think the process, and this is because a lot of PIs are not familiar yet with sort of the NSF process, says, well, when will the awarded proposals be decided? So does somebody want to go and get into sort of the timeline?
So there's a target we have broadly of responding to roughly 70% within 6 months. Because of we understand CRII allows folks to hire their first graduate students in many cases, we try to shorten that as much as we can. And we always also tend to try to make the funding, the yeses happen quickly so that you can go hire the graduate students. But I think you should reasonably expect that if you're getting funded, it'll take 6 months before here. That's not to say that everyone will hear within 6 months, but most of the yeses will hear within six months.
Yeah, and same thing with declines. They should all, you know.
Declines sometimes drag out a little bit longer because we're not always sure, but I mean, it varies.
Right.
But don't contact your program officer until at least the 6 month mark to ask what's going on.
Okay. Yeah, there are some simple ones. Are multiple submissions allowed for CRII in the same submission cycle?
No.
That's an absolute no. And that's directly in the solicitation.
Yes.
We already got to some of these other ones.
I saw one question about the 24 and 48 months. So let me hit that one again, because that is a point that we spend a lot of time discussing. So you have to have, and this may have been, again, before we covered it in the presentation, you may not have more than 24 months already from whatever other sources, and you must propose at least 24 months in your CRII solicitation, and the total of those together must be no more than 48 months.
Again, looking at the chair letter template, the instructions about how to do the chair letter template, it's very explicit about how to count everything there. And the minimum of 24 graduate student month support is also, that's directly in the solicitation. So I think, again, Jeremy's, as in Jeremy at the slides, read the solicitation, and then there's also that chair letter template has a lot of information about exactly how to compute sort of what's allowed and what's not.
Could I jump in with one question? I'm not sure if you're going to cover it, but again, it's about this eligibility. It says, if the startup package from the university states 2 years of one graduate student support plus a bunch of money for infrastructure, does that pass the eligibility criteria? It depends upon that where that money for infrastructure is coming from and basically how big it is. The letter instructions state that you can exclude infrastructure money only if it comes from a source such as a state or industry program that is explicitly limited to funding infrastructure. Otherwise, if your department simply declares, you can have $1 million for infrastructure, but only one student, sorry, you have to count the $1 million. And then you can subtract out the amount stated in the letter to be allowed for your own computing equipment.
Okay. The next one, I guess, you know, we're at time, right, Jeremy? But we can keep going.
We are at time, but we'll continue. I think we've never finished this on time.
Is a PI eligible if he or she is a PI on a foreign grant?
I think the requirement solicitation only talks about being a PI from a U.S. government.
I think it says federal, which means U.S. government.
Federal. Yeah.
Yeah, I think not an international or even a state award would not disqualify, or tribal, for example. Yeah, it says in the PI role from any department, agency, or institution of the federal government.
Okay, and here's one that's a little different. What's the process in case I feel my proposal fits into two different categories? I assume that means two different divisions under the CRII program.
It might even be two divisions within, two programs within the same division. You can put you can identify multiple programs in your title. You could say like CRII colon III space SATC. That would be a common combination. The Information and Intelligence Systems, which is what AFRIM is part of, and the SATC program, the cybersecurity program that I'm part of. So you would just list both of them in the title, and that tells us that you think we should both take a look at it. And it may be that both of the programs will review it. It may be that the program officers will decide one or the other, or maybe even a different one altogether. It's just sort of a clue to give us a hint where to start from, but it doesn't guarantee who's going to review it.
Right. So the point being that you can put more than one program, you can list more than one program. It helps to put the one that you think is primary, that's most likely that fits best with as first. That just helps us in sort of sorting things out. This is a very specific question. I don't know if anybody here can answer. Is the foundational research and robotics program included in this to have more hardware and physical robot experimentation for mechanical engineering faculty members?
Yes.
Yep.
So that program is included?
Yes.
Yeah, so even though this is a SAIS program and foundational robotics is a joint program, yes, you can apply for foundational robotics.
Okay. That's quite clear, I think. Is one eligible if one has previously received federal funding for activities not related to research? I think I know the answer to this one, but.
Presumably, if it wasn't related to research, they wouldn't use the title PI. I don't know. How would you answer it, Alan? I'm not sure.
I think it's actually very explicit. It says there are certain things that are excluded. Things like, well, graduate fellowships, infrastructure proposals are not included in that list. If you're a PI, one of those doesn't count, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's very explicit there. Again, if it's not, what I would say to the proposer, this one's an anonymous one, so I couldn't even tell you who it is. Ask the program director in where you're thinking about proposing. Be very explicit. That's what email exchange where we can actually just look, you know, really start to figure out what the eligibility criteria are for that. The next one is about letters of collaboration. Are PIs allowed to submit letters of collaboration?
Yes, but they have to be the generic letter from the PAPG, which says if the proposal, there's specific wording in the PAPPG, if the proposal by so-and-so titled such-and-such is awarded, I'll do the stuff that that it says in the proposal. So the letter is just saying, yes, I'm going to do those things. It doesn't actually say what they're going to do. The what they're going to do has to be within the 10-page technical proposal.
Yeah. There are very many talking about the letter and the eligibility criteria for funding and all that. And I think we've covered that multiple times.
If people don't feel that their question got answered, you can also contact one of us after the fact, but I think we've hit those a bunch of times. Yeah. By after the fact, I mean after this webinar, before the deadline. Someone asked, could you share the link to the solicitation? If you Google CRII on the NSF site, you'll find it quickly.
Yeah, it's NSF5.
Someone asks, is there a template? NSF does not require any particular formatting tool. So you can ask your colleagues for a LaTeX template or a Word template or any other template you want.
Right. And there is a check when you submit, at least through Fastlane, to make sure that actually the formatting is within guidelines. Right?
Yes.
I think we actually covered this, but I'm not sure. So if the PI's program does not have a chair, but rather everybody reports to the dean, will there be a problem with the chair letter? As long as it follows the template, can the dean do the
department? Yes.
I think the answer is that's right. So if it comes from the dean, the assumption would be that that's the equivalent of the department head, right?
Yes.
Are equipment purchase costs or lab setup costs allowed in the budget?
Yes, although I would discourage anyone from putting more than 10% of their money to that. There's not a hard limit. That's sort of a mushy limit that more than 10% starts to be unusual. Ephraim or Alan, for that matter, do you have any other opinions on that?
I think your answer is reasonably good. I don't think this budget is intended for buying any substantial equipment that we would expect the PI to get funding for that from some other proposal that they would submit a successful proposal. I mean, $175K will go only so far, right? And so you can fund some things with it, but you can't fund everything that you might really need or want. That's true actually of many NSF awards, that they're not really enough to fund the work you want to do, whatever kind of award it is, at whatever level. And so PIs are typically expected, both by NSF and especially by your university, to go after multiple awards. You are allowed to have multiple awards from NSF, even from the same program, simultaneously, concurrently. You can have multiple awards from different funding agencies. So these are definitely things that you will want to start thinking about. You should not expect the CRII award to really provide all the money you need to do anything, essentially. It'll provide some seed funding. That's really all it's doing.
Okay, there's a question here that's, I think, again, for, you know, when you have an inexperienced PI, sometimes it's not clear. So what's the difference among submissions from Fastlane, research.gov, and grants.gov?
We don't care.
I think this is just general advice, right? So maybe Jeremy or Brian.
I think general advice is to use Fastlane. There are certain things that don't always work correctly in all of them. And if you haven't done it before, and I would imagine for most people applying for CRII, this is their first time through, even though Fastlane is a really ugly user interface, it tends to have fewer bugs in it.
So yeah, and I would say actually that that's another case where talking with your sponsored research organization to see what they're most comfortable with, because they probably want you to use, you know, whatever they use, whatever they're familiar, most familiar with. And over time, you know, research.gov is going to take over time, right? That's sort of what's been happening. And but for now, you have to use what you have to use, right? I mean, so the key with all of these is to start early, get familiar with it early, and, you know, on how to submit documents and push things through. Don't wait until the last minute, because that can get really ugly, as the voice of experience is speaking here.
I've got to really emphasize your point, Alan. I had several people this year say there was something where it wouldn't accept my PDF, and it was 5 minutes till five, and I couldn't figure out why it didn't work. Will you let me submit it after the deadline? It's like, why the hell were you waiting until 5 minutes to five to submit your proposal? And the answer was no. They missed, it was a career proposal, and they missed their last opportunity to submit a career proposal because they waited till the last minute. Do it at least a few days in advance. Then you can update it. If you have a newer version, you can update it without any penalty. You just don't wait until the last minute to start.
That's right.
Sort of like professors advising students.
Here's a really short one. Can somebody submit a CRI and career in the same year?
No.
Nope.
Right, and that's explicit. I think that's very explicit in the CRII solicitation. As a soft money research scientist who's usually funded under somebody else's funded project, would that be counted as current support? So I think the question is, what goes into current and pending support? Really, that's the question.
I'm sorry, could you read the question again?
As a research scientist, they are usually funded under someone else's funded project until they can fund themselves. So would the project they're currently being funded under count as current support? I actually know how to answer this. So
please.
So what counts as current and what counts as current or pending support is things that you are actually listed as a PI, co-PI, or senior personnel, right? So if that's if you're listed explicitly on some, that's when that goes on under exist current support. So that's I think the answer to that one.
And if you're not the PI, it's certainly not going to hurt you.
That's right. You're allowed to be co-I or senior personnel on as many. It doesn't matter. That's right. Those don't disqualify you from CRII. I'm having trouble finding ones that we haven't already covered.
Would teaching professors who have PhD students in their institutions be eligible? Yeah, as long as they're capable of doing the research. But they would be treated as, assuming they're not PUI, they would need to be paying for graduate students, not undergraduate students.
I think it's important to say, just in general, since we're already a quarter past the hour, so, and we seem to have a backlog of questions still unanswered. You're welcome to send email with questions to any of us afterwards. Doesn't have to be today. I mean, you know, just during the coming days or weeks, and we will do our best to respond to them for you if we didn't get to answer your questions during this live session. So,
So what do you think, Jeremy? Should we wrap up?
If you're okay holding on, let's go another 10 minutes and then stop. Are you okay with that, Ephraim and Alan?
I can do that, sure.
Okay.
But even then, you're still going to have a lot of questions.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a lot of questions. I'm having trouble finding ones that we really haven't already discussed. Mm-hmm. Unless there are some that are asking really detailed questions about, you know, how do I count things? And that's not, I think, a useful exercise for here.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, if people are really concerned that they might not be eligible because of very unusual circumstances, how to exactly count this or that, the simple solution, in my opinion, is to think about the core small solicitation instead. Then you don't have to worry about all that stuff. You can focus on the science you want to do rather than the eligibility, because there are no restrictions on eligibility for the core small solicitation. And you can get more money, up to $500,000 instead of $175K. So there's several reasons to go that route if you have a specially complicated case, a not straightforward case. Why waste your time overly, you know, fretting about that if you don't have to?
Okay. So here's one that's actually a little different. So besides checking previously awarded CRII grants, is there any other tool to identify or match my proposal with NSF size areas of interest? I can take that one.
Go for it.
Take it.
So it actually gets to what Ephraim was just talking about with the size of the core research program. In the core research program solicitation, there are links to program pages for all of the different programs and divisions within size that describe the kinds of research that are supported through the core research program. That's actually the best place to decide where your work fits best. And I'd like to hear if anybody else, you know, has other suggestions, but that's what I tell whenever I have PIs ask about whether things fit into within OAC's research portfolio. I say, look at that program description on the core research program. That's the best description of the kinds of research that OAC supports, and I assume that's what the other divisions.
So the CRII solicitation has links to all of them, so you don't, including not only the core programs, but also CPS, SATC, and the FRR programs. So you don't even need to go looking for them. Just look at the CRII solicitation, and it has links to all the programs. A couple of people also asked, where do I find the department chair letter? That's linked to from the solicitation. Like the slide said, read the solicitation and read it again. There's a lot of good information in there.
And if I could just add one more point. If you are worried, suppose I submit to the wrong program. Am I doomed? The answer is no, because the program directors in each program will look at the proposals we receive. And if we conclude that you did not submit to the right program, despite using your best judgment, you chose wrong, you submitted to the wrong place, we will contact you and we will move the proposal for you to the program where we think it's a better fit. And we don't just dump it like a piece of trash, you know, because we don't want it. We have to talk to the program directors first in the other program and get their agreement that it would be a better fit in their program. And then we will contact you after both programs have agreed basically that the transfer makes sense. So we will do this for you if you submit to the wrong program. You don't have to stress yourself out too much if you fear, oh, I submitted to the wrong program, now I'm, you know, dead. That's not how it works. We do not work, despite the way Hollywood likes to portray government people as often working, we do not work in some maniacal way with the goal of causing you the most distress that we can. On the contrary, we want to be as helpful as we can. Most of us are professors in universities as well, either currently or previously. We know what you're going through, especially starting out, and we will do our best to help you with that. So yes, try to find the right program to submit to, that's good. But if you make a mistake, and everybody, it does happen, we get a number of those every year, we will try to fix it for you. We'll discuss it with you, and we'll try to find a better home.
And within CRII and career, I would estimate that we move 10% of the proposals from one program to another. So it's not common, but it's not rare either. Mm-hmm. A couple other questions. What I decided to do is I scrolled to the very end of the question list, thinking maybe some people who are just listening now are doing it. So they've listened to all the answers, so they're not repeating. Someone says, our institution considers postdocs as research faculty. Does NSF require the title to explicitly be a research scientist or engineer? I think that comes down to the department chair letter and your department chair signing off that you meet the criteria.
Right, and also the university, your university or institution allowing you to submit as a PI, right? That's the other thing, is you have to be eligible from your institution to submit whatever your position, your title is, that allows you to submit a proposal as a PI.
And someone else asked, postdocs are not eligible for CRII at their and they ask, are there other resources under size that a postdoc can apply for, including a regular proposal as the main PI? And that depends on your university. Some universities will allow postdocs to apply and others don't. NSF doesn't have rules on the core programs that Ephraim was talking about, or the SATC program, or the CPS program, or most of our programs. From NSF's perspective, postdocs can apply, but your university might have a different answer.
Yeah.
I'm going to answer this one because it's one that everyone wonders about. What was the success rate to get this award last year? And the answer is NSF doesn't share success rates on a program by program basis. For size overall, the success rate is around 20%. We do share that. And CRII is a little bit more generous, but I can't share a specific number.
Right, we're not allowed.
If the PI moves from the host institution to a different institution which still qualifies for CRII, is there any process for transferring the grant? Yes, this is something that NSF does routinely. The old institution and the new institution both have to agree, and then they have processes in place that recalculate budget to different overhead rates, and the sponsored research office does all that magic, but the money does move with you. Assuming the two universities agree. Oh, here's one that I have to answer. Sorry. Alan, I don't mean to be jumping your role.
No,
I want to get some of these new ones that haven't addressed.
We have a very large number of questions. I'm just not able to.
Right. Do you suggest using FOIA requests to get examples of previously awarded proposals? No.
No.
Absolutely not.
Very bad.
For two reasons. For two reasons. One is, it takes a long time before you get anything from FOIA. If you submit it, even in the best case, it's going to take 6 to 9 months, and that's too late for the deadline. But more critically, when you FOIA something, NSF will look at it for NSF sensitive information, and then we're going to send it back to the PI, and we're going to say someone has FOIA'd your proposal. And so you've now created an enemy of that person whose proposal you FOIA'd. And I've seen this happen, and it's destroyed potential collaborations. Ask the person. It's completely legal to file a FOIA request, and we will respond to it because the law requires that we do. But it's a terrible thing for you to do from the perspective of your career. It's gonna make you enemies of your peers.
That's right, and more of the point is that you can find out about awards, which are public, not the proposals, but you can see what the prizes are. And you can actually ask people who have successful awards. You can ask them, and I'm sure you can find people who'd be willing to share their proposals, right? Whether it's at your institution or another institution. So, you know, going through a legal process is just not the best way to go about doing that.
What is the term, if Rhyme is referring to core solicitations? That's the term we use in SIZE, and also they use it in other parts of NSF to refer to the base year after year, in many cases, decade after decade. So they're all listed in the solicitation. If you search,
you can go to the NSF website. There's a search box in the upper right corner. Type in NSF space 2591. NSF space 2591. That's our core solicitation.
20-591.
Yeah, pardon me. Yeah, of course. NSF space, I don't know, but that's needed too. 20-591 is our new core solicitation. Just like the CRII solicitation is 20-593. They all have numbers, and you can search for them that way, or you could just probably type the word core into the search box. I bet it would work too. I don't know, size core, IIS core, something like that.
NSF size core will find it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Someone asks, I'll repeat my question since it wasn't answered. Can one submit a very similar proposal to a normal solicitation and to CRII? There's a strict rule that you can't submit the same proposal twice, but you could submit related proposals. But when you say very similar, that scares me. If you submit something that's very similar, chances are that one or both will get rejected without ever being reviewed. So make sure that you're not submitting essentially the same proposal twice. There was a couple others here. Can a PUI, primarily undergraduate institution, pay for grad students at an affiliated PhD granting institution?
No.
Okay.
How's that for a quick answer?
I like it. I didn't know the answer, so I learned. Is the essential resource criterion different in the current solicitation compared to the past solicitations?
Yeah. Who knows? Probably.
Yeah, it is. We changed how we defined it. Does startup money count as current support? Yes. Well, not from a perspective of listing current and pending, but from a perspective of computing whether you have enough funds. Can one submit a small proposal as co-PI and another proposal as a PI? And I'm not sure whether this question is referring to smalls in the sense that Ephraim was talking about them within the cores or with respect to CRII. So let me answer them both. For CRIIs, you may submit one proposal per year with a PI, no co-PIs. So that answer, that question wouldn't make sense with respect to CRII. With respect to small proposals, you have to look in general, the answer is yes. The core programs and SATSE, and I'm not sure about CPS and robotics, allow you to submit two proposals per year as either PI or co-PI. Can Goalie be used? And would that require an industrial co-PI on the cover letter? You can't have co-PIs on CRII, so you can't do that.
So, Jeremy, it's 3:30, I think.
Okay. Yep. Okay, so let's wrap it up. I apologize if we didn't get your question answered. I think we probably answered several hundred questions here, and we still have 149 of you willing to be tortured listening to us. So thank you for participating. Thank you for listening. If we didn't get your question, as Ephraim said, send an email to one of us or to the program officer closest to your area. The one piece of advice I'll give you about asking a question by email is don't send emails to a bunch of different program officers. asking the same question. Send an email to one program officer, and that person will respond quickly. If you send a message to a bunch of people and they find out about it, they're going to be annoyed at you because you wasted a bunch of people's time doing the same repetitive work. So just choose one person and send it to that one person.
Thank you for saying that. Excellent point.
Okay, Henry, Alan, Ephraim, Karen, any of you want to make any closing comments?
I've spoken enough already.
I think we're good.
Henry, Karen? Okay, then it's a wrap. Watch for the audio. It will not be on C-SPAN. We look forward to seeing all of your proposals on November 2nd. Thanks very much, everybody, and we can all disconnect now.
Okay, thank you.